Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast with board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 470, Epic Tabletop Odyssey, Star Wars and Star Trek. We like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new review. Hey friends, we're back. And on this special episode, we are talking about Epic Tabletop Odyssey gaming. Now, we've all played board games, we've all played card games, we've all played role-playing games, but have you ever played them all together in an epic Tabletop Odyssey? Because if you have not, in this episode and other episodes, we'll be taking on different themes and telling elaborate stories about how these games connect together to create an epic gaming experience at the table. It might take you a day or two to complete, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's something that we've been talking about on and off for a couple of years now at this point, I believe.
Yeah, gosh, maybe the whole time we've been doing this. Like, I think the examples we're going to give today are specifically the thing we've been talking about, is like these games that bleed into each other, and that if you could find a way to link them up and sync them together, you could create this big, epic, sprawling experience. And guess what? We found a way.
We did! We did a thing, and it's awesome. And I think it'll be a big help for everyone involved. And I think it's something that we'll come back to again and again. Like, for example, at the time of recording, it was a solar eclipse here in the U.S. And we all played Eclipse the board game, because it fits. Right?
Yeah! I mean, it might as well have, because at least here.
Yes.
We had, like, literally 2 hours of clouds across a two-hour eclipse. The rest of the day, nice and sunny. Beautiful day today.
Very true.
Bunch of college students standing around my campus being like, where's the sun? I don't even know where the sun is, let alone look where the eclipse is. Eclipse a board game would have been great.
It would have been. And we would have other games to go along with that as well. So I think this works really well. And I think this is the easy test version. Star Wars and Star Trek have an elaborate story already put together. But I think in future versions, we will build more of a story around the different games so that they can connect better. Maybe it's a part of your collection, right? That this is the Victorian situation, or this is the political campaign. And, you know, we'll take suggestions from the audience as well to see how we can kind of put those games together. But that's going to be our feature review, Anthony. So we'll get on to that in a little bit. But we have been doing a lot of things ourselves. We just got back from the Long Island Tabletop Gaming Expo 2024, my friend.
We did. That's another thing we did.
We're doing things.
We do things. That's how we do things. Yeah, it was a blast. We were up in Garden City, New York for a second year in a row, featured guests there. And it was amazing. We got a chance to meet dozens, maybe hundreds of people across the 2 days up at the beautiful table. As part of the Cradle of Aviation Museum. One of the coolest venues I've ever been in for a convention.
Yes, hands
down.
Period.
Yeah. It's such a cool way to like just meet people and also walk around and see some cool airplanes. But we also presented on Leveling Up Your Tabletop Teach, which I led that one, which was a lot of fun, talking about like, how we teach games and kind of some of the tips and tricks for different types of audiences and different types of settings. And then Will led a discussion on leveling up your mental health through gaming. And we were joined by our good friend Derek from Nomnivore Games, who was also there with us that weekend. So it was a blast. Like, if you were there and we met you, awesome. It was really cool seeing you, and we hopefully get to see you again next time around. If you didn't get a chance to join us, we will have recordings of those presentations, and they'll be up on the website in, I don't know, a couple weeks, probably. We'll let you know here when they're up.
Yeah, we'll add them to our Board Game Academic Collection. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun tabling out there. Thank you to all the people who attended the different presentations. Thank you to all the people who came up. Really had a great time playing with all of you, gaming with all of you, talking with all of you. The vendors were fantastic. As you mentioned, Anthony, it's such a great place because spaceships and airplanes just like hanging around in the middle of nowhere. I was parked right next to a jet the entire time because reasons.
Yeah. That's so cool. It was so fun.
So a big shout out and a big thanks to Courtney and Joel, who run that wonderful convention. And a big shout out to our friend Game Master Dave, who was running the whole tabletop area. The whole second floor was his. And he ran a wonderful convention. So many games played. So many great volunteers out there. Everyone caring about tabletop gaming. Everyone getting people to the table and introducing new games all the time, which was beautiful. Great game library. And one of the big events there was their wonderful nonprofit that we work with all the time, Board Games for the Better. They had a tremendous raffle, like hundreds of games.
So many games.
Yeah. So again, shout out to Chris, Aaron, Vanessa, and their whole family for bringing more board games out there to people who don't have access to them for whatever reason. New communities, new gamers, and people in need. So if you have a dollar or you have a game, reach out to Board Games for the Better. They do so much tremendous work in the community. And again, once again, thanks to Courtney, Joel, and everyone out there. Derek, Will, great time. And we hope to be there next year again. But Anthony, that's not all that we've been up to these days. We have a little journal thing that happens to be going on.
Yeah. So Board Game Academics, which you all know and love because we've been talking about it for about 18 months now, is currently accepting submissions for issue 2, as well as our conference coming up in July. So it's been extended. I think we mentioned this last week, but we're extending it to April 22nd. So there's plenty of time still. If you have a academic journal article that you're thinking of, you've done research, if you have clinical experience, if you have anything, real world applications with, you know, academic structure behind it that you want to share with the world, now is the time to send us a proposal. You don't have to have the paper ready. Send us an abstract along with kind of the resources and research that you've started. And we will evaluate for both the conference this summer and the journal issue coming out at the beginning of next year. So please, but share with others, send in your work. We are looking forward to reading them. I will be, my job, of course, as the editor, is to kind of go through and evaluate and make sure everything fits the bill. And then our wonderful editorial board will read those blinded. So even if you know us and we know you, you can submit them. They're reviewed blindly, just to ensure everything's on the up and up ethically. So we look forward to reading them. Send those in.
Yeah, it should be a wonderful opportunity to get work out there and to share your experiences, whether it's research or, you know, practical applications. And then there'll be a conference this summer where you get to network and hear about more people that are doing great things. So again, thank you so much for considering. Please share with all your networks. It's really helpful. And as we've said many times before, the first issue's out. Check it out. Share it with others. All right. Well, Anthony, there happens to be something going on in the tabletop industry that we're always a little bit of a fan of. There's a little website called Board Game Geek, and they're doing a thing again.
They do this thing every year. We talk about it every year. You got to come through for us, people. You can do it. We're getting it on that list. Golden Geek Awards are up. You can submit your nominations. And, you know, I know we mention this every year, and it's not what gives us meaning in what we do necessarily, but it would be really, really cool to be nominated in the podcast category. So if you're putting in your nominations, or even if you're not, and this is hitting your earballs, and you want to get in there and take a look, we would really appreciate you just, you know, giving the thumbs up to Board Gamers Anonymous and submitting us for a nomination for Golden Geek Awards. It's a great way to increase exposure. It's a great way to just show everybody all the awesome stuff we're doing here. And, you know, we know you're all awesome, so we would really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for all for the nominations. We would be honored to be nominated with, you know, especially amongst so many great colleagues out there in the media industry. All right. So that's everything that's happening with us and gaming out there. Anthony, let's talk about things we would love to talk about. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right. So when I put this on the list a couple weeks ago, it was like just announced. And I was like, ooh, that's cool looking. I'm going to put that on my list. And then I just logged into Board Game Geek and saw it was number 2 on the hotness. So y'all probably already know what it is because it's been up there for a little bit. But this is the new Reiner Knizia game coming from Mighty Boards called Rebirth. And it is a game about kind of rebuilding a civilization after it's been pummeled by all these various catastrophes and calamities and everything, just kind of destroying everything. So specifically, you'll be in Scotland and you are now restoring the land and building it back up and kind of competing for control of everything. Now, it's a Reiner Knizia game, so it's tile laying and probably fairly abstracted to a degree. But it's bright, it's colorful. It's got that Mighty Boards is a company that's kind of become known for in evoking the sense of world building where it's kind of fun place to be. A lot of companies lately, it's been very dark, not necessarily fun to be, but fun games. This is very bright and colorful and interesting artwork wise. So I'm excited to see what it does, right? Like, it's the kind of game that stands out to me just purely through its visual aesthetic. And then knowing it's Reiner Knizia game, you know, on top of everything else. Like, there's an airship there, there's windmills, there's like a castle in the sky. It's almost got like a Miyazaki type of flair to it, just in terms of pure art design, which I love. So I'm looking forward to this launching on Kickstarter, whatever it does, so I can learn more about it and decide if it's something I want to check out. But at the moment, at least, based purely on the vibes that the game is giving off, I'm on board. I'm interested. I love me some like solar punk space or sky farming type of stuff. It's just one of my favorite genres of things, and it looks cool. Hopefully, it's not just like pure unadulterated Knizia abstract, because it could look cool and just feel like most of his other games, which are good, but I have a few. So hopefully there's something new and interesting there to latch on to mechanically, but aesthetically, love it. It's Rebirth.
Yeah, I think historically his games did not have that visual flair.
No.
And it's an understatement, I know. And I think it certainly always had worked against it. So, mm-hmm. As you said, it'd be really nice if there was some thematic gameplay. But this is certainly a step in the right direction. The man's a genius. He creates genius works. Yeah. And I would love for this to be everything it looks like it can be and more.
My only other thing here is, please don't cost $100. Like, I just can't with this. It's so expensive. Like, Bratz Birmingham was $60.
Yes.
Okay. $60, and that's, we got the best game of all time according to Board Game Geek rankings, mm-hmm. and it came with the chips and it was amazing, and now every game under the sun is $100 to $150, and it's ridiculous. Stop doing it.
Yeah, and they talked about this recently too, because some of the numbers came out from last year as far as financially where the tabletop industry is currently, and it's not increasing like it was during the pandemic and afterwards. It kind of plateaued out, which is not bad, right? It reached heights and it's stayed at those heights, but it's not going any higher. And again, capitalism, right? So like you always must be growing, right? You must be going higher. Right. And I think that's also because, not just because of the shutdown and the pandemic and all that kind of stuff, but I think we've reached a point where the cost of games are just wholeheartedly across the board a barrier for entry. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this for a decade, even when games were cheaper.
Yeah.
And now with the fact that, like, Kickstarter, BackerKit, GameFound, and everything else that's out there, and even some direct retail stuff, that you have to buy a $100 game and or every expansion this thing could ever come out with, at least initially, and now spending $200-$300, I don't know. It's a lot harder. You know, it's just, especially like our jobs, as we see them, so to speak, is to advocate or demonstrate or, you know, bring new people to the table and bring this wonderful hobby to them so that they can enjoy along with us. And yet at the same time, it's getting harder and harder because once upon a time, you could just jump on Kickstarter and try something new or support, you know, a new designer, publisher, things like that. Or you could say, hey, you like the game, that's great, you should pick it up. But now it's like $150. Like,
right. Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, no one's bigger advocates for the games and the publishers than us and the designers. They deserve $10,000 per game. But like, it just stops bringing new people in. I think we've hit a limit. I think we hit a wall.
Right. Yeah. And like, I know we turn almost every acquisition disorder into this rant every week, but it's worth ranting about every week. Seriously.
Well,
and we don't know that this game's going to do that. This game might be $50 and be totally accessible and it'll be fine. Like, this is not about Rebirth. This is just about crowdfunding in general, just being out of control and how frustrating that is as gamers. Yeah. And also just as advocates for the hobby, not feeling comfortable promoting certain things that I think would be really cool, but are just way too expensive.
Yeah. And I think it's as gamers who are more or less obsessed with the hobby, I think we do have acquisition disorders, which are all the games. And I think we would like to have all the games. And by that, I mean the ones that we really want, we would really want them. Like, again, the deepest appreciation and love and obsession for these wonderful works of art and science. But, and I know that you and me, we've had this conversation many times, and we've talked about this on the podcast, like, our Kickstarter, like, the things we've backed is much less, right? Like, dramatically, the things we back, right, projects and things like that. So, we do not want to do that. So, I would say, again, you have to have an entry level to your game that so that people can play it and not go like, and almost like in an somewhat threatening way. Like, if you do not back this now with all of its expansions and miniatures and everything else, you will never see this again. Right.
Right.
Like, we're holding this hostage. If you didn't get it now, sucks to be you. Enjoy paying double for it on the secondary market.
Right. Right. Right.
Right. Like, again, I have not played your game. Good publisher, I would like to, but can you release the base game first and then come back later? No, you have to buy everything all at once. Like, all right, I get that, but like, I don't know if I want to invest $250 on something I have not played. Ah, you know, like, it's just, it doesn't play well, is what I'm saying. So, and we're missing a lot of great games. Honestly, we're missing a lot of great games. Like, there were days where we could just like go, I'll give this a shot.
Right.
There's a lot less of that happening these days, unfortunately.
No, yeah. Like, I back the number of games I used to back, especially during the pandemic, versus where I'm at now. Like, I think last year I backed three things. One of them was an expansion. Mm. This year I haven't backed anything yet. So it's
I haven't backed anything yet either this year.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. Again, more love. Let's get more games out here. I am happy, though, to mention a game that's going to be coming up on Kickstarter in about, I don't know, 14 days or by the time you hear listen to this podcast. Millennium Blades. Again, that's at least the name of the title here.
It's back.
It's back, bruh. The CCG Simulator is back. And Grab Life by the Blade, which is, like, I guess, is their motto here. With four expansions. So, I've played this. I have this. I have the base game. I don't have any of the expansions for the game. This game is utterly unique.
Yes.
And innovative and dynamic. And it's a bunch of inside meta crazy kind of fun. And it is certainly like the methadone for CCGs, right? Like if you're a CCG player and you just can't do it anymore, and like, you know, your wallet's bleeding to death out there, pick up Millennium Blades, get to play pretty much what is like a real-time simulation of playing CCGs and all of the different aspects, not just like playing a CCG because you could just get the cards for that, but all the different dynamics that go into it, buying, selling, trading, collecting the cards, sharing the cards with friends, the different things that go into the competition, you know, working with friends to kind of collect, you know, better combos that you could put together, going to different tournaments, different events that come into play, and a lot of that kind of inside geek meta as far as the characters and the cards and things like that. So this is a great game. We played this quite a long time ago. We have not talked about it in quite some time. For me, this game's a buy. I don't know, Anthony. Do you remember?
I have it too. I have the set rotation expansion, which lets you play the game solo. And yeah, it's 100% a buy for me too.
Yes. So it's coming out again. Their rationale for this is it's hard for people to get the game. So they're reprinting the game.
Right.
They're streamlining the game. And there was a lot of expansions and promos and stuff out there. So they also have streamlined and condensed all of the expansions into three, I would say, middle-sized expansions. So if you have the base game, but you don't have any expansions like I don't, you could pick this up for just the expansions. They've done a really great job allowing you, like if you're a new gamer, you can get all of the things, or at least let's put it this way. You could get the base game, which is great. Thank you for doing that. Or, you know, you could just get the new expansions, which is great. Or you can get everything, which, again, for the amount of art in this game, because all of the cards, it's a very good price for the game. There's a lot of different tiers. It goes from simple to seriously complex with everything in the kitchen sink. You can certainly dive down deep into this. But I think this also could be a replacement for CCGs if you're kind of burnt out from CCGs.
Yeah, no, Millennium Blades is a such a brilliant, ridiculous, messy, psychotic game. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. Like, the thing is, it shouldn't work, is really the best way to describe it. It should not work. It should be broken. It should not be effective. And yet, somehow, it's like this house of cards that manages to hold itself up in just the right way. And it's fun, and it's interesting, and it's ridiculous. And it's not just like a CCG game. It's a CCG in the 90s game.
Yes.
Like, you could just look at the Kickstarter, and they're using all this ridiculous 90s art
aesthetic.
And I love it. It's fantastic, because that's what the game feels like. It feels like CCGs felt in 1998.
Yeah.
When Yu-Gi-Oh! Launched, and Star Wars, the Cypher card game, and Magic was in its weird phase. it's cool, and I'm excited for the new stuff. Like, again, I have the one expansion. I never ended up picking up the others, and now they're out of print, and this brings, you know, things back and gives a whole bunch of new stuff as well. So it's a lot of fun. I wish I played it more. I think this coming back into the consciousness maybe will get me back to play it more.
Yes.
Because the solo mode with the set rotation, which is available here, you can get the set rotation expansion, is very, very good. It makes it possible you play against an AI in the game. But of course, it plays 1-6 as well. So it's just everything you'd imagine about CCGs kind of through a twisted Yu-Gi-Oh! Type of lens, like where everything is life or death. This is it.
Yeah.
As a board game.
And if you're not a CCG player, you can still enjoy this because this is straight up a board game. It's just a board game about everything around CCGs.
Yeah.
And a lot of that kind of, I wouldn't say Euro mechanics, but a lot of that kind of management of different aspects of the games and resources are here. And I find that incredibly interesting. And it's just a very different take on the game. So at the very least, you owe it to yourself to check out some of the videos up here. The campaign's very good. It's on Kickstarter, come out in about 2 weeks, because it's a very different type of game. I don't think there's anything out there like this.
Yeah.
All right. So that's our acquisition disorders. Check them out. And hopefully you get them to the table. All right, that brings us to our At the Table. Anthony will let people know if games are a buy and they should run out and pick those games up, if games are a play and they should sit down and play them, if games are a dodge and they should avoid them, or in fact, if the games are the dread burn and you just hold them up to the eclipse and they burst into flames, because that's what eclipse do when you don't have the right glasses.
Your eyes just explode.
Well, the game explodes. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
It's a thing. You had to be there.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't there, thankfully.
So. or maybe the game is like, I think like a Saturday Night Live did it this past weekend.
Jumanji.
You get Jumanji'd.
Oh my god. I want to get Jumanji'd into Millennium Blades. That'd be fun.
Oh, that'd be excellent.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of another game I'd love to get Jumanji'd into, Star Wars Unlimited, Spark of Rebellion. This is the new CCG from Fantasy Flight Games about Star Wars. And it's pretty hot right now. Actually, it's completely sold out right now. So it's hot with the people who could find it. But it feels like this game kind of got some groundswell and built up, because when it launched, you could find everything. They printed a ton of stuff. It was easy to get. Nobody was really talking about it. And then a month later, people were like, oh my gosh, everything's selling for triple the price. So it's going Lorcana on us. Full Lorcana. What is the game? Star Wars Unlimited is a CCG, like I mentioned. So it is collectible. You get boosters. There's expensive cards in there. And this first set has, you know, a lot of the stuff from the original trilogy. And then also like Rogue One is pretty heavily featured here. And the way it works is you have a deck of cards that is built around a leader card. You have one leader that's, I think the base set has about 15 or 20 leaders to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are like your Luke Skywalkers and your Vaders and your Boba Fetts, but then also some of the characters from Rogue One, like Jyn Erso and, you know, the blind guy. I can't remember his name.
Blind guy.
Yeah, Donnie Yen. Whatever his character's name was.
He was the best in the whole movie.
He's amazing. Yeah, yeah. I wish I could remember his name. It's like Chiwat or Chivat. So you have your hero, your leader, right? And that's what you build. They have some icons on them, and you choose a base. And then they'll have icons on them. So you'll have like two or three icons, and then you build a deck around those icons. And those icons are various colors, like blue, green, red, yellow, whatever. But then also you have the Rebel and the Imperial icons as well. So the game is interesting because you're not just building like, I have a Rebel deck and I have an Imperial deck, which is like what the older Star Wars CCGs are. You can kind of mix and match it, because you can put any card in your deck. If it doesn't match these symbols that you have, then you just pay extra to play those cards, which you would never want to do, but you could do it, right? So, which makes sense, too, because I feel like that split between good and evil always kind of limited the play pool and made it more difficult, especially when to like tournaments. Like, everybody had a Darth Vader deck and nobody wanted to play the Rebels. That's an interesting part of it. If you get the starter decks, it's Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader, of course, which is pretty straightforward. And then gameplay-wise, you have an interesting mechanic here. There's no like types of resource. There's a single resource, and what that is you take cards from your hand and play them face down in front of you, and now that's in your resource pool. At the beginning of the game, you're going to take two from your starting hand. Later on, you have the option of adding one every round. So you can build, you should keep building up your resource availability, but if you have a round where you're like, I want to keep these cards, or if you get a high enough resource value, you don't need to keep going, you can stop. You can just keep your cards that round. And the other interesting thing is these leaders all have like a threshold that you can hit. And when you hit that threshold on resources, you can play the leader into the battlefield. So they're all going to go to the ground space, because the way the battlefields work is you have ground and you have space. So each unit that you play is going to go to one of those locations, and it's going to fight only in that location. Ultimately, what you're trying to do is knock out all the health on the enemy base. Most bases have 30. I think one has 25, because it has a special ability and epic action you can take. But you're just trying to knock those down. So you want to manage those two different locations as best you can to make sure that you're able to target in and hit those bases when you can. The game is fantastic. It plays very quickly. Every game I've played of this is under 30 minutes, which is the sweet spot for any CCG. If it goes over half an hour, it's no good. I can't do that. the resource management is very simple. You're not dealing with things like energy or land, like in Pokemon or Magic. It's just you have a pool. It's important that you manage your pool, and that's going to determine what you can play. But you don't have to worry about like the types that you have, which means you're not watering down your deck. Every card in your deck is a card you might want to play. And it's just, tactically speaking, whatever's in your hand, you decide like, okay, this card's not useful right now, or I have three of them in my hand right now. I don't need this one. This one's going to become a resource instead of just waiting for the lands to come out of your deck. And the result of that is that almost every decision you make is interesting, right? You're not wasting turns. You're not waiting for things to come out. Yeah, you're waiting for your combo to get built up like any good CCG, but you're always able to do something and respond to something. Now, there are some downsides here. I've noticed, at least with the starter decks playing against my son, that occasionally, the way they're built at least, you know, sometimes you only get one side or the other. There was one game in particular where my son didn't get any spaceships at all the whole game. And so I had like two or three ships on my side, X-Wings, and they just kept firing at the base, and then he lost. Now, there are ways to mitigate that, but it can be frustrating. But it's a CCG. Game is short. Sometimes that happens. You just get a good draw. You're going to win really quickly. You reshuffle, play again. The game feels like Star Wars. The cards are fantastic. The artwork is new and unique, which for Fantasy Flight is something, because they've been using the same hand-drawn artwork for like 12 years at this point. So they went and got new stuff. It's a little more stylized. Some of it's kind of cartoony. I don't hate it, but it's a little weird. Like the Han Solo artwork is weird. It's a weird picture. But I like it in general. The collectability element is not terrible. Like there are legendary cards. They're hard to find. But like the really expensive stuff is just like the special full whatever artwork. Like if you want to collect, it's there. They're expensive. But to play the game, you don't need those cards.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a buy for me. And honestly, I wouldn't have picked it up if my son had not insisted. Like, we played it at PAX. He loved it. He said, we have to get this. So I pre-ordered some stuff. Now I have it. And I'm like, oh, this is actually really good. And I'm having a lot of fun. And I might keep buying it. The second set's already been announced. It's like Mandalorian stuff, which means I have to buy that too. So,
well, this is the way.
It is the way. Yeah. The next starter set is... Moff Gideon versus the Mandalorian. So
Gonna make all the monies.
Yeah, I know.
We've been talking about that for a long time. Like, when is a Mandalorian game coming out? And I guess this is kind of it.
Finally, we're getting some Mandalorian content. Yeah. The Grogu card's fantastic. It's like zero attack, five health, and you can use it to exhaust your opponent's characters. So. He's hard to kill, and he wears you out. It's like, perfect. That's a baby. So, yeah, Star Wars Unlimited, it's quick. It's very dynamic. I don't know how they did it, but they really managed to take like all the things that annoy me about most CCGs and like pull that stuff out of there and make it quick and accessible in a way that, honestly, the only other game that's made me feel like this is Keyforge, which is not a CCG at all, right? Like, everything you do is interesting. Even when you lose, you're like, okay, well, let me try to solve the puzzle with what I have.
Sure.
It didn't work. Fine, let's try again. Whereas sometimes Magic or Pokemon or whatever, you're like, this game sucks. It's taking too long and I'm going to get destroyed. So, yeah, Star Wars Unlimited. It's going to eat some money and hopefully it doesn't die in a year and a half like most Fantasy Flight games. But so far, it's pretty popular. So I'll be interested to see where.
It's hard to talk about this because, again, there are so very many CCGs out there, and it seems now has been another renaissance of CCGs, good and bad, right? There's just a lot out there.
Yeah, it's exploded. There's at least, like, I think 5 or 6 new in the last year.
Yeah, I remember last year talking about where the CCGs are as far as, like, who's playing them and how much money they're making. I mean, I'm hoping that the market can hold all of this because they've all been relatively good, right? Locana's been good. Star Wars Now has been very good. What I really liked about the game, and I, as much as I am a huge Star Wars fan, I was kind of ready to dismiss this because I just recently picked up and played and loved and adored Star Wars, the deck building game. I have almost everything for Star Wars. The LCGs, I mean, I have a lot of Star Wars stuff. Let's just put it there. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't need to have yet another Star Wars game that was primarily more of the same, so to speak. Because again, like you said, when it becomes a CCG, it becomes expensive. It becomes, you know, difficult to track things down. You have to create a certain deck, and the deck has to do a thing, and there's metas involved. Like, it becomes more of a thing, and you have to really love it in order to invest the time and effort into it. What I was really surprised by from this game was, as you mentioned, a bunch of good things. First up, in the box, in the base box, the game is immediately playable. And yeah. It's not a cheap version of a, you know, two decks, right? There is a lot of cool dynamics. There's a lot of cool cards in here. It plays very nicely. So many CCGs, when they come out, they're like, here you go. Here's a really weak base deck that you're going to hate, which is then going to force you to buy more, you know, expansions and, you know, more packs and stuff like that, right? Good, good. Use your hate to buy more of our stuff. But here, when I played it, I was like, oh, this was incredibly fun throughout the way. The biggest challenge with the game is, not knowing the cards, of course, but the biggest challenge with the game is while I'm playing and getting cards into my hand, every card was good. Every yeah. card was playable. Every card had a purpose, and every card more or less had some sort of synergy which it could play out. It wasn't like, oh, here's a hand of cards. This is junk, and I can play this one card. Get some more cards, junk, and I can play this one card. It was like, I could go this way. I can go to space, or I could stay down here. This buffs this. This buffs that. Maybe I want to take a power action. Like, there was a lot of really cool choices to make. It added to some of the analysis paralysis, but in a very good way.
Right. Yeah, no, it's the thing I love about this, too, is they're smart. They're like, all they cared about was getting people to play the game, right? The two-player starter kit is fantastic, because you look at Lorcana, they had starter decks. They're not bad starter decks, but they didn't pair them together, right? There's like, there's three of them. They're fine. Do they pair up well against each other? Kinda, whatever. This is like, it's tuned in a way to make sure that both sides have an even chance, that there's good synergy within the deck and against the opponent, and that it's fun to play. I've played both sides like half a dozen times, and I've really enjoyed it. Now, I've started deck building. Some of you are listening, you're like, just the starter kits? I'm like, no. I've started deck building. We've bought some cards. I have some cards we purchased. Too many, I should say. And it's just the way it's designed makes it interesting to do that. I don't generally like deck building, because what it ends up being is like, what are the two or three big cards I want to build towards? And then what's all the stuff that builds towards that? And where's all the junk I have to lay in around that to make it feasible, right? Like the chaff that you're going to throw out on the battlefield to keep yourself alive until your big combo comes out. I don't find that fun. I find that just like, I'd rather just look it up, right? In this case, I'm having fun, because you can't, like, I'm not saying there aren't other CCGs that do this. I know there are, but there's none that I've played recently that do this really well, of just giving you enough of a smorgasbord of options and allowing you to build out this different kind of synergies and see what happens with it. I know there's a meta here. I know there's a best decks and a blah, 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 blah. I don't care. I'm playing with my son and my friends. and I'm actually enjoying the deck building for once, which is just a rarity, I would say. They really found a way to hit the balance. I hope they maintain it. I know it's one set. They had time to build it up. We'll see what happens with the next one. You get into this cycle of releasing three or four of these sets a year, and it becomes like, can you maintain it? Eventually you jump the shark and it becomes a mess. So we'll see. But at the moment, great.
Yeah, and a lot of good choices. I think oftentimes, again, if you play CCGs or if you play, you know, CCGs or stuff like that online, the artwork was all over the place. I would say it was mostly not great. I think it was below par. But I think, of course, they do that because it incentivizes you to get other packs to have better artwork, right? They want to give you more or less base kind of artwork. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't anything in particularly impressive. Like, I looked at all the cards I had, and I was like, that's all right. You know, it wasn't nothing super dynamic or interesting as far as that's concerned. But I enjoyed it throughout. It had a lot of different ways and paths to victory, which I really do love. One of the things I don't like about CCGs, or even the online CCGs that we talked about recently, I don't like to build a deck that does a thing. If that's what the decks are, if that's what the gameplay is, you don't need me to play the game.
Right. Like, yes. 100%.
The cards, like, either the cards come out and it does the thing, or it doesn't do the thing. I don't need to be there for this. So,
right.
Yeah.
It should feel like you're piloting a deck, like that you're trying to manage the things that are available to you, not just being like, all right, did it work? No, I quit. I concede because the cards I need didn't come out in the first three hands.
Yeah.
Ugh, I hate that.
And I think they did a really good job, at least with the space set. I haven't seen any of the other decks and packs you could pick up. The Mandalorian stuff is very interesting to me. I don't know if this has pushed me over. I think when the Mandalorian stuff comes out, if it's substantially good, I might now invest. But and the good thing is, even if I do, I could still play this as a two-player game, tabletop situation, never have to go towards, you know, an organized play event, and feel satisfied, which is a good feeling for a CCG, because, again, it usually does not have the gameplay quality and level that tabletop games do. This does. I mean, I thought that player sheet that it came with, where you put the cards out, was junk and terrible, but again, it's to be expected. So, yeah, it's a buy for me as well. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. So,
all right. I have Star Wars Unlimited. Woo! Who knew?
I have spoken. All right. So, I got to recently play two games that were supplied by the publishers for review. First up is Castle Up. Castle Up is from a new company, from Woolly Games, and it is a small box card game in which you are, as the name implies, you're castling up. So basically what you have your main castle card, and basically what you're doing in the game is you're building up your tableau through utilizing resources to purchase cards from the market. And the cards from the market are from three different eras, and these eras have different buildings that will support your kingdom. These different buildings do a number of different things as far as, military that obviously is going to support you in attacking people, other players at the table. This game is very militarily driven because basically in phase one, you're purchasing buildings, you're utilizing the special abilities of those buildings, and or action cards that are in the middle of the table that you'll be able to utilize. And then you go to the actual buildings, which allow you now to attack. So there are military buildings all about, you know, attacking and defense in some cases. There's merchant cards that are all about the resources and how you can build up your resources to be able to purchase bigger and better cards. What I also like about this game a lot is you also have an opportunity to swap out old buildings for new ones. So that kind of gives you an incentive to build early and then think later on about building the second and the third age. There's civilian cards that give you a lot of different resources and activities and ways to utilize your money. And Wonder. I mean, it's just, again, it's a good city development building game. It reminds me of Citadels. It doesn't have the social dynamic aspect, but it does have that kind of city building where you're placing relatively straightforward cards on the table. There's a lot of iconography. It's not difficult to figure out. There is some text. Again, not a lot of text. I like the fact that the iconography is pretty straightforward. The text is pretty limited because basically you need to know what's going on your opponent's side, because as you build up your own particular castle, you need to attack theirs. So you're going to exhaust your cards for their special abilities. You're going to attack your opponent's cards. You're going to damage them. They're going to flip over. You're trying to destroy them. They all have a special level of health. And then there's going to be a lot of combos that are going to come into play as far as utilizing resources into defense. Like, you could build a lot of defense. You don't have to go hardcore attack. But attack does obviously help you slow down your opponents from achieving victory. Game's all about victory points. You'll be building victory points throughout the game in the different eras. Gold buildings are obviously very important because they help you throughout. The game plays for 2 to 4 players. I felt it played best at 2 just because anytime there is a game where you're attacking other players, if there is 3 or 4 players, you're really expecting and needing other opponents to be very strategic on who they attack because, hey, that person's leading or they have a lot of military. Can you do that instead of attack me? But in a 2-player game, it's very straightforward. It's very understandable. It works a lot better for me personally as a 2-player game. Game's small. Box is small. Cards, deck, great components as far as little chips that are concerned in the game. I don't really have any particular criticism of the game. I don't like the word castle up. I guess that's the only thing I could say. And primarily because when you get a chance to look at this game, you'll see that the artwork is so good. It really evokes that kind of medieval, civilization. It's mostly, if not all, buildings pictured here. So it doesn't seem like a Farmville. It doesn't seem like a, like when I think castle up, I think more kitty. I think more like tiny towers. I'm building up like a little city. This is actually a card game. I think, teenagers and young adults could play this, of course, but it's a serious game and it's a lot of fun. Plays in under, at least in my game, plays at all different player counts. We got it done in about 30 to 45 minutes. They say 60 minutes. I'm sure that people could, play at that length. So Castle Up, it's a buy for me. It'll be up on April 16th on Kickstarter. So check it out.
Awesome. Yeah, it looked cool, mm-hmm. But I know like our early conversations around it, I wasn't sure like where that would land. So it's really great to hear that it's a solid experience.
Yeah, I haven't seen a full. I mean, there might be some changes because I didn't get the full rulebook. I got the rulebook online as a PDF. Mm-hmm. So take that with a grain of salt. But just looking at the game, if you take a look at the picture, there's a market of the buildings. There's a cost for the buildings. And there's actions in which you can take instead of purchasing buildings or in concert with that. So mm-hmm. I don't think you need the rule book too much. You just need to know what the iconography happens to be and you can kind of play it out.
Great.
All right. Next up, I want to talk about 2 expansions that I got sent to me. This is from Star Trek Away Missions. I got the Captain Kirk expansion. Admittedly, I am a huge Star Trek fan, as we'll talk more about in the upcoming feature. Star Trek Away Missions is a tactical skirmish game in which you're trying to complete missions that are going to score you victory points. This is 100% a victory point game. Everyone's checking out the Battle of Wolf 359. There's a Borg cube that has a lot of technology. You are sending your team down there to meet a certain number of conditions based upon your mission cards. You can play as the Klingons. You can play as the Romulans. Most people are going to play as the Federation because they're awesome. This one has Captain Kirk and Captain Kirk's crew, so pretty cool. If you love Captain Kirk, he can do a really cool thing, which basically it allows him to take an extra action, basically an extra die that he can kind of roll to get an extra chance because Kirk is always about, beating the odds. So again, he's doing it here. And then I also got a chance to play the Commander Scotty expansion. Scotty is my favorite character in the original Trek. Scotty's great because as he is like a miracle worker as far as an engineer is concerned, he gets a bonus when he's doing engineering, of course. So the characters do play very thematic. The actions and the cards that come along with them are very thematic. There's also a new feature here called Beam Away. If you know Star Trek, they beam away, they beam on board, they beam off board. It allows you to take your character off board and then roll dice to meet certain conditions as far as the quests are concerned. So if you played the base game, one of the big challenges is that it takes a long time to get to certain sections of the board. Sometimes you can get to a teleporter, sometimes there's the enemy in the way. And that can slow the game down. Here, it gives you an opportunity to jump off and do a thing and then jump back on, so that it scores you a lot more points. It allows for more balance throughout the game. Both expansions are very good. If you love or like Star Trek Away missions, this is definitely something you should buy. If the base game has not done it for you, this is not going to do it more for you. There's not enough new here to change the challenges that you might have with the base game. But again, if you're a longtime fan, it's good to have these boxes. There's also the next generation boxes as well. There's the Duras sisters, and there's Captain Picard as a playable character, and the rest of the TNG crew. Didn't get those expansions, can't speak to them, but they're also available. This is for big Star Trek fans. Outside of that, your mileage may vary, because the game really is not the best tactical skirmish game that I've played at this point. But again, it's a really good game from Gale Force 9. Again, for Star Trek fans, check it out.
Awesome.
Last thing I just want to mention, I got a lot of games done of Terraforming Mars on Board Game Arena. They had their alpha. It's out and playable. I love Terraforming Mars. And you get to play, you can play solo, or you can play with other players. They don't have the expansions yet, which they really need the Prelude expansion. Please, dear God, put the Prelude expansion. Got to play it a lot solo, which I did a couple of times initially just to kind of learn the game, but I'm not really a solo player. I've played a lot of the solo. So, Terraforming Mars has always been a big buy for me. I don't like the original solo play. I don't like the trying to meet all three tracks. Even the points are okay, but since the cards really determine what you're able to do, and because it's so fewer rounds, it's not the best. But the game itself is still awesome. So Terraforming Mars is on Board Game Arena. I liked it. You should like it. I find it the best version of Terraforming Mars that's out there on digital platforms. I have the Steam version and the expansions, and I find it lackluster. Here on Board Game Arena, it actually focuses on the tableau, and it gives you enough screen where you get to see the whole Mars. And it also gives you options to hide certain decks, tile certain decks out so you can see all the cards, put them in a row so you could just see the icons. Like, it gives you a lot of options to manage the cards, but Terraforming Mars is about the cards. It's about the tableau. The Steam version doesn't allow this. The Board Game Arena does. Check out the Board Game Arena version. I definitely recommend it.
Literally the only thing that matters. Yeah, like that Steam version. I don't know what they were thinking.
No, they made a really nice Mars and then like tiny, tiny little bits of cards. And I'm just like, I've played Terraforming Mars 100 times. And then when I played on Steam, I'm like, I don't even recognize this game. I just don't. Yeah. So yeah, I would absolutely dodge the Steam version, but I would absolutely buy, or again, obviously you could get a subscription, but play the Board Game Arena version. I'm happy to have it. I think it's great. All right, so that's every game that we got to the table this week, or the tablet. All right, Anthony, now it's time to get on to our feature review. Our feature review of this week, of course, is about the greatest gaming experiences of all time. Basically, it's when you play a lot of games back to back to back to back. It is Epic Tabletop Odyssey. And for this week's episode, we're going big with Star Wars and Star Trek. Because there's really good established stories here, and there's really great games out there, a lot of games. So what we did is we picked out the best games that fit thematically. This is not a ranking of the games, but basically if you were to play the games back to back to back to back, as far as building a story is concerned, and like a real rich, deep experience that made sense, this is the way that we think that we would at least recommend that you should play it.
Yeah, no, it's like a curated experience, if you will, a menu.
It's a tasting. We're giving you a lot of things to love here. Some pairings along the way.
Yes, enjoy.
All right, so let me start off, Anthony, because as I'm talking here, I just mentioned Star Trek, and I just mentioned Away Mission. So Star Trek. It's the future. We're doing awesome. At, you know, after some bad time. But if you know the Star Trek lore, and
what are you doing?
I like both so much, but I'm taking Star Trek this week. But I want to take Star Wars as well. If you know anything about Star Trek, all about the future, all about humanity, you know, exploring the stars on this 5-year plus mission to just make friends with other people, and every once in a while, slappy slappy, punchy punchy, kissy kissy kind of thing. So, you love Star Trek, or you want to play into the Star Trek universe, start off with Star Trek Adventures role-playing game. I recently picked this up, and it's a wonderful role-play game, excellent manual. And basically, what you're doing is it's a role-play tabletop game about Starfleet and how you, in this case, as a Starfleet recruit, is learning about more about the Federation, more about all the civilizations that are coming in. So what I'd like you to do as a citizen of the Federation here is to establish a character, a hero story that you would have. Again, there's a wide range of aliens to choose from, or you can go straight up human. And I want you to play some RPG here. Not the biggest RPG person, but I think this really works well. And you could play it from a lot of different perspectives or from a lot of the different stories that we have, whether it's the original, the next gen, Deep Space Nine, even Lower Decks.
Especially Lower Decks.
I love Lower Decks so much. I just started doing my rewatch on the Blu-rays, and I'm like, oh, I love this so much. It's so good.
So
once you get that character established and some of that backstory, you're learning more about the Federation and what you could do to be a good crew person. Now, what you do is you have to pass the Cadet Academy testing, right? A very big part of Star Trek is how all these different people come through the Academy, are rigorously trained, and have to be able to show off their knowledge about the Star Trek universe. Well, how do you do that? Star Trek, the original series Trivia Pursuit. I want you to pull out the Trivia Pursuit version of the original series, or again, any other, Trivia Pursuit version of this, and test yourself and other players based upon the Star Trek universe. Now, what's really great about this is, even if you're not the biggest Trekkie, you'll learn a lot about Star Trek playing this game, which will help you later on. If you win, or, as long as you participate, you pass on and move to the next stage, and now you get to be an ensign. You get to be on one of the ships, and in particular here, I want you to be on Star Trek The Next Generation, the Enterprise, the TNG, the classic. Now that you're on the Enterprise, you got to learn about the Enterprise, which typically runs into a lot of craziness. And in particular, one of the best things about the Enterprise and Next Generation is they have a holodeck where anything is possible, and typically trainings happen. So in this case, I want you to go super old school, if you can, or at least go on YouTube, and I want you to play Star Trek The Next Generation, the interactive VCR game.
Dude, this is, I love it.
This is old school VCR game.
Yeah. So, this is the VCR game, though. This is the one.
This is the one. This is based in, like, for you kids out there, once upon a time, you had a VCR, and board games were like, this is going to be the future of tabletop gaming. They'll give you an actual VCR cassette to play in the machine as you play the game out, and it gives you a story. And in this case, it's about a Klingon who takes over the Enterprise, and you and the other players at the table have to stop him from starting some intergalactic war with the Klingons by using the Enterprise or blowing up the Enterprise. So you do a thing, and then you check the tape at certain spots, and the Klingon tells you what the next thing challenge happens to be, whether you win or lose, how it affects other players. If you have not seen this, go on YouTube. Star Trek, The Next Generation, interactive VCR board game, Klingon challenge. The videos are up there. The complete videos are there. So you could actually, with some print to play, play this if you don't own this. But I think it's a lot of fun. It's kishy as all get out.
So kishy.
And I highly recommend it. All right. So now you went from being a Federation citizen to being a recruit to being an ensign. Now you're ready for some level of command. So now you're a lieutenant commander. You're working at Federation headquarters in the Alpha Quadrant, and you're doing some planning about how the Federation or one of the other factions you're playing at are going to expand through the Alpha Quadrant. You're going to do this with Star Trek, Catan, but with the Federation space expansion. So if you played Catan, you've basically played Star Trek Catan. But the Federation space expansion is a board that is basically, more or less, depending on how you look at it, the entire Alpha Quadrant. So you are settling all of these different areas. You're trading resources with different civilizations. You're utilizing different crew members to be able to gain special abilities. And it's your typical victory point Catan game. And I want to give you a sense of what it might be like to make those kind of plans out there, because that's typically what happens with the Federation. They have good intentions. They're going to go out there. They're going to meet different civilizations. They're going to trade resources. They're going to build up star bases like you do in the game. Now you get to a little bit of the challenging part. You're going to play Star Trek Ascendancy, which is a 4X game in which you play one of the major Star Trek factions. In this case, you could play as the Federation. And you're trying to expand influence based upon some of the choices you might have made with Catan. But the other factions have their own plans. And this is a 4X game where you are going to explore and expand, but also exterminate. So there's a lot of military action. It's a big, sprawling, TI4-looking game. And now at this point, after you did the planning, you are an admiral. So you actually get to put those Catan plans into motion, set out fleets, attack other players, deal with the Borg, deal with the Dominion. It's just a rich kind of big, epic kind of experience. As you're having this, you're going to shrink down. Maybe you got bumped down a little bit to a lieutenant. And now, you're going to bump down to a captain. And now you're playing Star Trek Fleet Captains. You're in charge of one of the fleets in Star Trek Ascendancy. And this is a tactical space combat game in which players command fleets of starships in the Star Trek universe. But it's an old school game, but a lot of fun because each of the tiles is a different civilization that it's based on a particular episode of the show. You're commanding a small fleet of ships against another player. You could pick Klingons, you could pick Romulans, Dominion, whatever it might be. But it gives you that kind of zoomed in attack kind of feel. Now, you move on to Star Trek Attack Wing. This is a miniature game in the flight path system in which you're actually playing one, two, or three small ships or capital ships, depending on what kind of points you take as far as the game's concerned. You fill them up with crew. You fight other people in skirmish battles on the board, and hopefully you come out at that dogfight with a win. Next up, you do Star Trek Frontiers. Now, this is a solo board game, so this is all about you, based in the Star Trek The Next Generation universe, in which you're going to explore space. This is not the battle thing, but there's going to be some battles in here as well. You're going to complete missions and meet up with different other crew members and other different campaigns and other different stories from the Star Trek universe. So once you kind of get all your captain stuff out of the way, you are, of course, going to beam down and have that skirmish tactical fighting game with Star Trek Away Missions. Now, this Gale Force 9 game that I recently talked about has a lot of different expansions and certainly more along the way. And you're commanding crew members tactically fighting out, trying to complete particular missions because, you know, maybe the Frontiers didn't go so well as a captain. So now you're actually a lieutenant on the ground with a phaser, battling Borg, you know, and trying to win the day for the Federation. Finally, you wrap up your amazing adventure with Star Trek The Adventures role-playing a game once again to see how far your character progressed from citizen to ensign all the way up to admiral, back down to captain a little bit, because if you know anything about Star Trek, nobody wants to get bumped up to admiral. Everyone wants to stay in the captain's chair. And you get to, you know, play out that adventure using a 2D system. And again, it's a lot of fun. And then once again, play Lower Decks. Play Lower Deck characters because they're the best.
Yeah.
And there you go. 10 game opportunities to build up a wonderful Star Trek world and universe in which you play the main character throughout, playing all different tactical, epic battle, victory points, and even some wackiness with a VCR game that you can watch online.
Epic.
That's what I'm saying, bro.
All right, I guess I got to follow that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Star Wars.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's a thing. People like Star Wars. Eh, some people like Star Wars. I don't know.
It depends on the week.
Yeah. We used to all love it, and things have happened. So, Star Wars has a lot of games. Quite a few very good games, I might add. And if you combine those games, and we've talked about this one in particular many, many times in the podcast, you can create quite the epic experience for yourself.
Oh.
So, similar to your Star Trek Epic Odyssey, we're going to start with Star Wars role-playing game. Now, there are many Star Wars role-playing games that you can work with. You've got Star Wars Edge of the Empire, Star Wars Age of Rebellion, Star Wars Force and Destiny. You can go old school with the Star Wars role-playing game, that thing we all sat around and read on our living room floors when we were like 9 years old. But the goal here is, let's build a character, because Star Wars is not about, regardless of what the log lines say, it's not about epic, sprawling empires fighting each other in space. It's about like four people going from planet to planet, right? It's about the Skywalkers. It's about Han Solo and his little crew. It's about families coming together. So who are you in this world? Or what, are you a smuggler? Are you a Jedi? Are you a Sith? Like, who are you in this space? You're going to build your character. You're going to approach the galaxy far, far away in your own unique way. So once you've done that, you are going to jump into the broader world with your character in Star Wars, the card game, right? This is a customizable card game. Players can build their own decks representing either light or dark. This is the LCG from Fantasy Flight, so not collectible necessarily, but customizable. Now, while it's technically out of print, they made a billion of these, so they're not hard to find. So there's a lot of them out there. You can find this game. And it allows you to kind of delve in and explore this world. You can set up the broader general archetypes that you're going to work with, including the planets and the ships and the various characters that you might interact with in this galaxy far, far away. And then you can get really broad and really get to know the layout of the galaxy with Star Wars Rebellion. This is the coup de grace strategy board game for Fantasy Flight Games. It allows you to control either the Galactic Empire or the Rebel Alliance. And you're not just fighting each other. You're fighting each other everywhere. This is the whole galaxy. You've got military conflicts, diplomatic maneuvers, really cool stuff with Death Stars blowing stuff up. Everything is happening across the entire galaxy here. So you get a sense of where everything is. You get the layout. You get the map. You get to know all the planets. And it really sets up the various space and land battles that you will soon get to engage with. Now, before we get to those space and land battles, we need to zoom out a little bit and look at the bounty hunters, smugglers, and mercenaries that make up the texture of the Star Wars galaxy. Because Star Wars is not Star Wars without all the rogues and villains that kind of float around in the background. And that's why we have Star Wars Outer Rim. So this is a game where you get to compete to become the most notorious scoundrel. You're not a good guy. You're an anti-hero. Or maybe just a bad guy. Probably an anti-hero. Everybody in Star Wars is an anti-hero. So when you are playing the card game and you interact with these various bounty hunters and mercenaries and all the various characters that kind of float around in the background and get in the way of our heroes. This is just that. It's getting to know the broader world of the scum and villainy of the Star Wars galaxy and Star Wars Outer Rim. Once you've done that, once we have, you know, we know our characters, we've gone out, we've seen the galaxy, we've gone on our gap year off around the Star Wars galaxy to see where everything is and get to know ourselves, it's time to get into some combat, because that's what Star Wars is. It has war in the title. We need to fight. So first up, we got Star Wars Armada. This is, we are building to the most epic of battles. This is where Star Wars starts, right? You've got the giant capital ship chasing the little Corellian corvette, capturing it and arresting Princess Leia as the droids run off to Tatooine to find Luke Skywalker. This is what we think of when we think of Star Wars in space, is the Armada. So tactical ship-to-ship combat, epic space battles. Players are commanding entire fleets of starships with capital ships and starfighters kind of floating around in the side. This is the big epic stuff, right? This is what we start with Star Wars with. It's what we end Star Wars with. And, you know, let's pretend we're just talking about the original trilogy, because good movies only. Then, of course, that might be the bookends, but the really cool stuff is the dogfighting, right? So we've got Star Wars X-Wing Miniatures game. This is the tabletop miniature game that simulates starfighter combat. So you get your X-Wings and your TIE Fighters and a bunch of other models that nobody knows the names of. Y-Wings and Interceptors and whatevers. So it's basically airplanes from World War II, but like really cool sci-fi designs shooting at each other. And that is about as iconic as it gets when it comes to combat in Star Wars. So we're zooming in and we're getting to kind of see the individual characters interacting with each other in this epic scope, within the context of a broader space battle, right? The Armada is still happening. It's still out there. We've still got capital ships. You got the Executioner shooting at, you know, Home One, but on a smaller scale, you've got Red Five up against, you know, Vader's TIE Interceptor. But that's not where all the war ends, right? It's Star Wars. There's more war. So we're going to zoom down to the planet and we have Star Wars Legion. We have these troops together in these combat things led by individual leaders, controlling squads of various infantry, mostly infantry, but also some vehicles, small ground-based vehicles. Iconic characters are in there leading the way. You got Luke Skywalker leading a bunch of rebel guards. You have Darth Vader leading a bunch of stormtroopers into battle. It's ground combat, and it is tactical, almost skirmishy, but also kind of war gamey, miniature fighting with trying to represent the various factions that are on the ground fighting over the space. So whether you're trying to make your way through Endor and take out the shields to be able to knock out Death Star, or fighting over just that little scrap of sand on Tatooine, there's a lot of interesting fights to be had in Star Wars Legion. Now, when you have all these heroes running up with their various squads, eventually they're going to face off against each other one-on-one. And that's where Star Wars Imperial Assault comes in. The tactical game set in the Star Wars universe, and now you have rebel heroes or Imperial forces on missions trying to accomplish various things, but fighting each other in skirmish battles. So we have the broader fights, but within those broader fights, we have the named people, right? You've got your Han Solos, and you've got your Luke Skywalkers, and your Darth Vaders, and everybody, and they're running up against each other, as you see in the movies, because again, there's only like four characters in this galaxy. So they're all going to fight each other over and over again. And Imperial Assault's amazing because it covers almost everything. They released like 8 expansions for this. So you have everything from Jabba's Palace all the way to Grand Admiral Thrawn's ships. So once you get to that point, it's time to decide the outcomes of these fights. And that's where you get to Star Wars Destiny. This collectible dice and card game in which players, you're going to build out your own teams of characters from the universe, battle against each other using dice and cards. And it kind of goes back to what we got in Star Wars card game, but it's broader and it gets more of a sense of what's happening. And it really lets you delve into these individual combat elements between these different characters, right? So you have these smaller one-on-one personal fights, and now you can play it out with a much more tactical experience with the Star Wars Destiny. And finally, once you've built your character, gone on this epic journey, seen the galaxy, met a bunch of bounty hunters, ran away from those bounty hunters, flown through all the various capital ships shooting at each other, survived the X-Wing fights, and landed on the planet and got shot at by pretty much everybody, all four of the characters in Star Wars, we have right back to Star Wars role-playing. And this is where you get to build out your character, develop them further, see what they've gone on, see the journey they've experienced, and allow them to continue on adventures into the future, into episode 10, 11, 12, 14, 17, whatever we get to in our lifespan, with all four of those characters, maybe like three more too. Star Wars, the role-playing game, wrapping it all up on this epic journey you've gone on in the galaxy far, far away.
Well, there you go. We have given you two hopefully wonderful, epic tabletop odysseys. If you have the time, if you have the games, if you have the space at the table, I think you really enjoy these two epic space operas that we've enjoyed in our geek time. And now you can play them out in board game form. All right, everyone. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all to see you at the table. Take care, everyone.